It's time for justice. Welcome to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. on 97.3 FM WRIR and at www.wrir.org. I'm your host, Marty Wegbright. This show is written and produced by Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. We give free, civil, non-criminal legal aid to low-income people in Richmond, Petersburg, Charlottesville, and surrounding cities and counties. Coming up on this week's show,
child support payments are not considered taxable income to the receiver and are not deductible to the payer. And this is in stark contrast to alimony payments, which are taxable to the receiver and are deductible for the payer.
Attorney Nancy Rosner at the Community Tax Law Project offers tax tips for your 2016 filing for tax year 2015. And during this week's News You Can Use, you'll learn how the Virginia Poverty Law Center is trying to improve outcomes for youth leaving foster care. All that and more coming up. Stay with us. The show is supported in part by a grant from the Virginia Law Foundation. This show, number 282, is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society and gives only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford an attorney, we'll tell you later in the show how to get free legal advice or representation in a civil case. The Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show is heard every Wednesday at 12:30 on WRIR, 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio, and online at www.wrir.org, and is made possible by community radio volunteers at WRIR. And now, this week's News You Can Use. In Virginia, we have approximately 5,500 children in foster care. There are more boys than girls by a slight margin, and more teenagers than preteens and toddlers by a very large margin. Most of these children are placed in non-relative foster homes, and most come into the system because of a neglect allegation. In Virginia, a child can enter the foster care system through court commitment on an abuse or neglect petition, or on a child in need of services petition, among other avenues. A neglect petition can be filed for reasons relating to the child's physical or mental health or the quality of the home environment. From 2008 to 2015, more than 5,375 youth aged out of Virginia's foster care system. This means they turned 18 years old before being connected to a permanent family through adoption, returning home to parents, or having a relative take custody of them. Studies show that young people who age out of foster care without permanent connections have very poor outcomes compared with their peers. This includes increased incidences of homelessness and involvement in the criminal justice system and lower educational achievements. Virginia has one of the highest rates of youth aging out of care in the nation. National studies confirm that without supports, youth who age out have a 1 in 5 chance of becoming homeless, are 3 times more likely to drop out of school than the general population, and are twice as likely as the general population to be unemployed. Providing supports, such as stable housing and caseworkers, to youth who age out of foster care has been shown to have tremendous benefits. Youth who continue to receive services after age 18 are 2 to 3 times more likely to be enrolled in college, more likely to have health insurance and to seek health and mental health treatment when needed, and are less likely to drop out of school, become homeless, or get incarcerated. By opting into the Federal Fostering Connections Act, Virginia will be able to extend essential services to youth who age out of foster care until these youth reach age 21 and will receive federal funds for doing so. The program also allows adoption assistance to continue for any youth adopted at age 16 or older, which will help increase older youth adoptions, the group of youth most in danger of aging out. Opting into this program would require just $2 million in state funding over 2 years, allowing Virginia to draw down close to $4 million in new additional federal funds over those 2 years to help these vulnerable youth. With News You Can Use, this is your host, Marty Wegbright. With this week's News You Can Use, this is your host, Marty Wegbright. Welcome back to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio. We're here at the Community Tax Law Project again, and we are talking with Nancy Rosner. She is a staff attorney, and we will be talking today about tax tips for your 2015 filing, which is due in calendar year 2016. Welcome back to the show, Nancy.
Thanks, Marty. Happy to be here.
To start out with, tell our audience, how much income does a person need to have before he or she has to file a federal income tax return?
Your filing requirements are based on your filing status for the year and how much income you earn during the year. So a single individual making $10,300 or more in 2015 has a filing requirement. A married filing separately individual with income of $4,000 or more has a filing requirement. A married couple filing jointly for the year with income of $20,600 or more would have a filing requirement. And again, we're talking about adjusted gross income here. A qualifying widower with income of $16,350 or more would have a filing requirement for 2015. And also someone filing head of household with income of $13,000 or $250 or more would have a filing requirement for 2015.
Could you tell us what constitutes taxable income for federal income tax purposes?
It's important to note that taxable income can encompass more than just your annual salary. It can include wages, salaries, tips, unemployment compensation, profits from stock sales or real estate sales, winnings from the lottery, even winnings from betting on the dogs or horses or any casino. Even the cash value of bartered items is technically considered taxable income.
What are the tax implications of taking money early from a retirement account?
The income you withdraw is taxable if it is a traditional IRA and you did not pay taxes on the income when the money was placed in the IRA. And if you take an early withdrawal, meaning you are under age 59 and a half as of the close of the year, you are also generally responsible for a 10% penalty. This 10% penalty applies to the part of the distribution that you are required to include in your gross income for the year. Income you withdraw from a Roth IRA is tax-free as long as you're 59 and a half or older and your account is at least 5 years old. In order to assert this 10% penalty when you file your tax return, if you did take an early withdrawal, you will need to file Form 5329 with your tax return.
If a house got foreclosed upon, how does that affect taxes? Could you tell us about the Mortgage Forgiveness Debt Relief Act?
Sure, and luckily this Mortgage Forgiveness Debt Relief Act was extended again through 2016. So it's not something that we can count on every year. It does need to be extended each year. And the act prevents homeowners who go through a short sale, which is selling your house for less than the balance remaining on the mortgage, or a foreclosure from being taxed on the amount of their mortgage debt that has been forgiven. So normally, when a debt is forgiven, the amount that was canceled is considered income to the taxpayer. This is known as cancellation of debt income. But even if the act is not extended past 2016, taxpayers should be aware of the insolvency exclusion. What that is the taxpayer can exclude from his income any forgiven debt up to the point that that taxpayer was insolvent as of the day before the debt was canceled. And someone is considered insolvent when their debts and their liabilities exceed their assets. So that would help them to exclude the cancellation of debt income from their gross income for that year, even if the Mortgage Forgiveness Debt Relief Act was no longer in place.
So changing topics a little bit, who can be claimed as a dependent?
There are two ways that someone may qualify as your dependent, either as your qualifying child or as a qualifying relative. The qualifying child rules require that the child must be under 19 or under 24 and in school full-time or permanently disabled in any age. They must also have a qualifying relationship, which generally means they have to be a blood relative or relative through marriage, legal adoption, or foster care. The child must live with you for over half the year. The child must not provide more than half of his or her support for the year. And lastly, the child must not file a joint return for the year unless only to get a refund of income tax withheld throughout the year. Now, the qualifying relative rules are just a little different. So in order to claim a dependent as a qualifying relative, the requirements are that the person has to live with you for the entire year as a member of your household. You must provide more than one half of their support. Their gross income for the year must be less than $4,000, and that person must not be a qualifying child for you or another taxpayer.
Now, what about child support payments? Are they deductible, or can the taxpayer claim the dependency exemption for the child they're paying child support for?
Child support payments are not considered taxable income to the receiver and are not deductible to the payer. And this is in stark contrast to alimony payments, which are taxable to the receiver and are deductible for the payer.
All right, so talking about children, could you explain to our listening audience what is the child tax credit?
The child tax credit is a credit that you can claim for your qualifying children under age 17 that reduces the amount of tax that you owe by up to $1,000 per child. The child does have to meet six tests, and I'm going to go through those for you right now. The age test, which means the child has to be under age 17 as of the end of the year. The relationship test, which means the child has to be a child, stepchild, foster child, sibling or step-sibling, or one of their descendants. The support test, the child must not have provided more than half of his or her support. The dependent test, so you must claim the child as a dependent on your tax return. Then the child must also be a U.S. citizen, national, or resident alien, and the child must have lived with you for over half the year. And then to claim this credit, you can do so by filing Schedule 8812 with your tax return.
Could you also tell us about the credit for the elderly or the disabled?
Yes, the credit for the elderly or disabled pertains to people who are age 65 or older or disabled, and it helps people to reduce their taxes if they qualify for the credit. There are two main requirements. The person must be a qualified individual, and their income must fall within the allowable limits. To be a qualified individual, generally speaking, that person would have to be a U.S. citizen or resident alien, and either of the following must apply. So that person either has to be age 65 or older as of the end of the year, or if they were under age 65, the three following things must be true. The person must have retired on permanent and total disability. The person must have received taxable disability income for 2015. And on January 1st, 2015, that person has not reached mandatory retirement age. So they would be eligible for this credit, but additionally, you have to look at the income that that person received during the year. And the basic rules are that there are some limitations for a single person. If you had income, adjusted gross income of $17,500 or more, you would not qualify for the credit. And the limitations, you know, proceed for the different filing statuses, including married filing separately. If you claim the credit, your income limit would be $12,500 in adjusted gross income. And there are some other limitations, such as if you were a single individual, you're actually not eligible for this credit if you have $5,000 or more in non-taxable income for the year. So it is a little bit complex when trying to determine if you may qualify for this credit or not.
So as long as we're talking about credits, could you also tell us about something called the Savers credit?
The Savers credit is also known as the Retirement Savings Contribution Credit. And if you are a low to moderate income worker, with the Savers Credit, you can actually save for your retirement and save on your taxes with this special credit. It helps to offset part of the first $2,000 that you voluntarily save for your retirement. So you're essentially getting a credit for money that you set aside for retirement, which is great. The income limits, there are income limits, of course, and they vary based on your filing status. You may be able to claim the credit if you're a married couple filing jointly with income of up to $61,000, head of household with income up to $45,750, or a married person filing separately or single with income up to $30,500. There are some other special rules that apply, though, that you need to remember. You do have to be at least 18 years of age. You can't have been a full-time student in 2015. And also, another person can't claim you as a dependent on their tax return. Otherwise, you will not qualify for this credit.
And the last credit I'd like to talk about is the education credit. What is that? What expenses qualify for the education credit?
There are a couple different education credits that taxpayers can claim for 2015. There is the American Opportunity Credit that will be available up through 2017, and that is for the first 4 years of post-secondary education, and it does have to be a degree program. And you can actually get a tax credit for up to $2,500 of the cost of tuition, fees, and course materials paid during the tax year. You do have to make less than $80,000 per year to get the full amount of the credit, and then those earning more than $90,000 during the year are not going to be eligible for the credit. But for this credit, qualifying expenses do include tuition, books, supplies, and equipment needed for course of study. And at the end of the year, your institution should provide you with a Form 1098-T to use when you're completing your tax return, reporting what your expenses were for that year. There is also the Lifetime Learning Credit, and this tax credit is for all years of post-secondary education. And for this credit, a degree program is not required, and the taxpayer can get up to $2,000 based on costs of tuition, fees, and other qualified expenses paid during the taxable year. And essentially, that's $1 of credit for every $5 of expenses. To be eligible, you do have to make less than $63,000 per year. And importantly, you cannot claim the American Opportunity Tax Credit and the Lifetime Learning Tax Credit in the same year for the same person.
Now, this is the second year in which the Affordable Care Act, or Obamacare, is going to affect people's income tax filing. Can you tell us how the Affordable Care Act affects the 2016 filing for tax year 2015?
Certainly, and this is definitely a big one for this year. The Affordable Care Act requires that you and each member of your family have qualifying health insurance coverage for each month of the year, qualify for an exception from the coverage requirement, or make an individual shared responsibility payment when filing your federal income tax return. So many taxpayers will simply need to check a box on their tax return indicating that each member of their family had qualifying health coverage or minimum essential coverage for the year. However, taxpayers who purchase health coverage through the marketplace and qualify for or receive advance payments of the premium tax credit will have some extra steps to take when filing their tax return. If you did buy coverage through the health insurance marketplace, you should be receiving a Form 1095-A. It's a health insurance marketplace statement from your marketplace, and you should be receiving it in early February, if not before. And I'm told that those forms should be available on the marketplace if you go to their website around this time. The form does have important information that you will need to complete your tax return. Additionally, if you benefited from advance payments of the premium tax credit, you must file a federal income tax return for the year. You will need to reconcile any advance payments that you received with the amount of premium tax credit that you're entitled to based on your actual income. Because when you're applying for the credit, you are projecting what you think your income is going to be for the year. So when you reconcile, you're reporting what you actually earned during the year and making up for any difference. Now, when you file your tax return, you will need to complete IRS Form 8962 for the premium tax credit to calculate your premium tax credit and reconcile the credit with any advance payments. If you received a higher advanced payment than you should have, you may owe some money back to the IRS, or that may end up reducing your refund. I'd also like to mention that this year, when you're filing your 2015 return in 2016, you may receive some new forms that you didn't receive last year, providing you with information about health coverage you had or were offered in 2015. These forms are Form 1095B and 1095C. Health insurance providers, such as health insurance companies, will send Form 1095B to individuals that they cover with information about who was covered and when. Certain employers will also send Form 1095C to certain employees with information about what coverage the employer offered. Now, the deadline to provide these forms was extended to March 31st, but according to the IRS, individual taxpayers will generally not be affected by this extension and should not wait to file their tax return if they haven't received the 1095B or their 1095C. However, if you are anticipating receiving a 1095A, you should wait until you receive that document in order to prepare your return, because it will have some important information.
Okay, changing topics just a little bit, could you tell us about the innocent spouse protection? What is an innocent spouse and how do they get protected?
Sure. When married taxpayers file a joint return, they are essentially agreeing to be jointly and severally liable for the tax and any additions to tax that may arise as a result of the return. In some cases, one of these spouses may be able to obtain relief from that liability through the IRS. To obtain this relief, you must file Form 8857 with the IRS, and there are technically three types of relief under this umbrella. Innocent spouse relief provides relief from any additional tax you may owe if your spouse or former spouse failed to report income, reported income improperly, or claimed improper deductions or credits. As part of this, though, you must not have known or had reason to know of that understatement of tax, and under the facts and circumstances, it would be unfair to hold you liable. Additionally, there's the separation of liability relief, and that provides for the allocation of tax owed between you and your former or current spouse from whom you're separated because an item was not reported properly on a joint return. So you would only be allocated the amount of tax for which you are responsible. For this type of relief, you do have to be divorced, legally separated, or widowed, and you must not have been a member of the same household as your spouse with whom you filed the return for at least 12 months, ending on the date you file Form 8857 requesting relief. Additionally, to obtain separation of liability relief, you must not have had actual knowledge of the item that gave rise to the understatement of tax. Lastly, the third type of relief under the innocent spouse umbrella is equitable relief, and that may apply to you if you do not qualify for innocent spouse relief or separation of liability relief for something not reported properly on your joint return and generally attributed to your spouse. You may also qualify for equitable relief if the correct amount of tax was reported on your joint return, but then the tax was not paid with the return. To obtain this type of relief, you do have to establish that under the facts and circumstances, it would be unfair to hold you liable for the understatement of tax. Now, I want to point out that you really should file Form 8857 if you think you qualify as soon as you become aware of the tax liability for which you believe only your spouse or former spouse should be held responsible. And importantly, if you do file for this type of relief, the IRS is required to notify the spouse with whom you filed the joint return of your request. So if you're worried about any sort of retaliation, you really should take that into account because the IRS will contact your spouse or former spouse.
And finally, where can people get help with federal income tax problems?
Low-income taxpayers can contact the Community Tax Law Project here in Richmond, Virginia. We provide free legal services to low-income taxpayers throughout the entire state that have tax questions or tax controversies. You can contact us by phone at 804-358-5855 or visit our website at www.ctlp.org.
Well, thank you very much. We have been talking with staff attorney Nancy Rosner. She is at the Community Tax Law Project here in Richmond, and we have been talking about tax tips for 2016 for your filing for income tax payable for 2015 income. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thanks very much.
That's all for this week's Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. This show is heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. The show is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. To see if you can get free civil legal aid, call during intake hours. These are Monday through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. and 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. The phone number is 200-6046 for intake, 648-1012 for the main number, and 1-800-868-1012 to call toll-free. This show provides only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford one, call Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. The Earned Income Tax Credit, or EITC, is the largest program that transfers money to low and moderate income people. Join us next Wednesday at 12:30 p.m. when attorney Nancy Rosner at the Community Tax Law Project explains the EITC that helps low-income workers keep more of their income through credits resulting in a larger income tax refund. That's law for the rest of us next week on the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. I'm Marty Wegbright.